Hello, Tiff Davey here, today's host on the Behind the Collective podcast. This podcast takes you behind the scenes of the Livestock Collective as we share the real stories of those working across the agricultural industries, and we hope to empower you to share your story and maybe a fun fact or two along the way. I certainly learnt a fun fact or two during this interview. We're talking to Jodie Pengle, originally from the Central Wheatbelt in Western Australia. She's now an agronomist based in Kununurra. We talk all things early career, tips, tricks, why everyone should move north, and what we are growing in Northern Australia.
My name is Jodie. I'm an agronomist in Kununurra, Western Australia.
Beautiful sunny weather. So those down south where you're originally from, I would say, would be jealous. What do you reckon the temperature is today?
In Cunners? Yeah. Oh, I think it will be getting up to 30.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's actually, so it's been quite cold for us recently, but starting to warm up.
So you're an agronomist up here, but where did you grow up? So you're down from down south initially?
Yeah, so I grew up in Kellabarran in the Wheatbelt and did most of my school, all of my schooling in the Wheatbelt, so Kellabarran, Meriden, and then Cunderdin Ag, and then went to Perth for uni.
Now talk us through, fresh out of high school, you know, did you know you wanted to pursue a career in agriculture?
It's actually a funny question. When I was at ag school, agribusiness was my first choice when I applied for uni, and then I did a complete 180 and started a degree in criminology, which didn't last long. And then I decided I'd have a gap year, ended up on the mines, and my gap year turned into a gap 5 years.
Oh, wow.
I ended up going back to uni when I was in my mid-20s.
And what made you decide, you know, it's time to go back, or was it just something niggling in the back of your brain you wanted to pursue that career in ag?
I guess I didn't want to be one of those people that said they would always go back to uni and then never did. So it was always in the back of my mind that I was going to go back to uni. And working FIFO in an environment where people make a lot of money, I just realised that a lot of them weren't very happy and they weren't necessarily doing what they were passionate about. Mm-hmm. So I sort of sat down and had to think about what is it that I'm really passionate about, and agriculture was the obvious choice for me.
Yeah, and now talk us about the, I suppose, journey in coming up to Kununurra. How did that happen?
So initially I come up here in my second year of uni and did some prac, and that sort of just fell into place. A few guys 6 months ahead of me had come up and I saw their, you know, the classic Barra photos, and yeah. I thought, oh, where'd you go? So ended up coming up in my second year and did a bit of work experience with the ag department, and left after 2 weeks and told my mum I'm going to move to Kununurra when I finish uni. And mum didn't believe me, and then sort of as I was finishing my degree, it was sort of when COVID had started, and the job come up, and it all kind of happened quite naturally. Yeah, so that was 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago.
Oh,
now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it scary? I've asked this question to a lot of young people over the last few days. It does take an element of being brave to pack up your life and move north. You know, what would advice would you have to somebody doing that?
It was scary, but it also wasn't. Towards the end of my degree, I did start to think that I would stay in Perth, and I don't know what changed for me. Wanted to try something new, and for me Kununurra is so different to where I'm from, and I guess I kept telling myself and my family it's still in WA, but you know, I think Melbourne's closer than Kununurra to Perth. So I don't know, that obviously wasn't true, but advice, I guess I had a friend of a friend that lived up here at the time, which really helped get my foot in the door. I moved in with her because one of the hardest things living up here is finding somewhere to live, which can be a really big barrier. So very grateful and lucky that that sort of all fell into place.
And so what does a day in the life look like now?
Ooh, currently, like today, I spend probably half of the day in the field. Most of that is in cotton, but I also work in the horticulture space, so do melons and pumpkins as well. So it's half the day in the field and then the rest of the day in the office writing reports, we're sort of just tapering off the end of the cotton season now, so the first fields will be getting picked later this week, I believe, which is very exciting. But we also have some corn and some chickpeas and some sorghum that will see the rest of the year out.
Talk us through, like, when people talk about growing crops, I feel like they associate it with where we're both from in the Wheat Belt. Mm. But we've got plenty of crops up here as well in the north. So talk us through, like, a calendar year of events. When's seeding for all of these different things, and when's harvest? And big question, where are we selling them all to?
Okay, so seeding, we call it planting. That starts with cotton in, so cotton has a planting window, so they can only plant during certain dates. So that this year was on the 1st of January and ran until the end of March. So that's the first crop out of the ground. We sometimes have some small bean crops that sort of go in February, March. And then other crops like chickpeas, corn, sorghum are more April, May times. Picking for cotton, like I said, we'll start the end of this week and we'll go until early October. And the corn, chickpeas, all the other crops sort of come off September, October, ideally before any of the rain comes. Sometimes we do get some early rains, which is obviously not ideal. But yeah, we generally, most of the crops are gone by the time you run into that.
And how does it, how does it work in the sense we've got like CBH for wheat down in the Wheat Belt? So how does that work up here?
Okay, so I work for Ordco, so the Ord River District Cooperative. And so we're basically like a mini CBH, so we do a lot of the grain handling.
Okay, yeah.
So mostly the corn and the chickpeas and some of the smaller bean crops come through us. In the past, a lot of the corn has gone straight off the Wyndham port to South Korea. And then there is some retained for the domestic market as well. This year, there won't be an export ship just due to the shift in volumes. So we've got a lot more cotton this year and less corn. So we'll just be servicing the domestic market with that. The chickpeas are sold domestically. So the variety of chickpeas that we grow here is called Kimberley Large. So it's a very large seeded, white coloured chickpea, and because of that quality, it receives a price premium. So it will go in over east into salads and restaurants.
Yeah, okay. So all the silos here around your office, is that where it's like getting delivered to?
Yeah, pretty well, yeah. So most of them will have peas and corn.
That's really cool. Okay. So, you know, there's a huge domestic market for what's grown up here. What about your melons?
Most of them are trucked to Perth, but it's very market driven. So our melon growers will be looking at what the prices are around Australia and making a decision there based on the price of where they send them. So I do know that some get sent over to Melbourne as well as Perth. Sadly, not as much local produce gets sold locally. Some does end up getting sold through the IGA, but not as much as you would think given how much is grown.
And so during all of these, during like the seeding and the harvest, what are you doing? Are you you're in the field with your growers, or is it a lot more, paperwork during those?
It's a bit of a mix. So seeding or planting,
I need to get the terminology right. Okay. I'm a Wheat Belt girl, not good.
So we are sort of going out and visiting the growers and making sure everything's all right with their planting setup.
Yeah.
In terms of spacing and depth and whatnot. And then during harvest, where we do sometimes get out on the picker and drive around. Otherwise, a big thing with cotton is the crop destruction. So making sure that the volunteer control is down packed. So we have a cutoff date, which is October 15th.
What is that, sorry?
So cotton is basically like a tree, so it will just continue to keep growing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so because the cotton is genetically modified, there are some really strict guidelines on how you need to destroy the crop, and that's set by Bayer. And we have a cutoff date of October 15th. So after that date, there can't be any cotton growing until the window opens again the following year. So that includes, mechanical cultivation and chemical control where needed. It's a challenge. Obviously, we go into the wet season, so if things aren't controlled properly before that, we can be chasing our tails a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's mostly us driving around and making sure everything looks as good as it can, and then getting back out there during the wet season and managing it as we need to.
Yeah. So during the wet, you don't just finish up for the year. You've still got things to do.
That's when most people go on holidays, yeah. There's a lot of, I think, spend quite a bit of time doing research on how we can improve. So it is nice to have quite a bit of time. This year we'll have more time than what we typically have, just due to the change in crops and not as much corn. But because the cotton is still relatively new this time around, there's still a lot of work to be done and figuring out how we can do things better. So we find ways to fill our days, that's for sure. Yeah.
That's amazing. So, you know, what is it that you love about your job?
Oh, I love working with growers. Yeah. I feel very blessed. We have some really innovative and forward-thinking growers here. And I think people have often called the order like a bit of a failure, but I think the growers here are so resilient and they're so open to trying new things. So it's just working with them and figuring out how we can do things better and maybe putting an idea that might sound a bit wacky or crazy out there and having growers receive that well. And a lot of the time they're open to trying new things, which is really cool.
I suppose in a lot of ways the audit's still like not establishing, but it's not an, you know, old growing area. So with that, there's a different type of grower amongst it. And with technology advancing, things are changing rapidly as well.
For sure, yeah. I would say...
And science as well.
Science, yeah. And we pretty well can grow most crops, which is cool. So a lot of things has come and gone, and cotton and corn is our current phase, and we hope that this will be the one that takes off. We've got a cotton gin opening in the next 2 months, which is exciting. Previously, all the cotton has been trucked over to Queensland or Katherine late last year when the Katherine gin opened.
A gin, what is that?
So that's the processing of the cotton, so it's separating the seed from the lint. So the lint is obviously the main product, but the seed is, being the byproduct, is also a good source of cattle feed. So being in the north with quite a few stations around, people are very excited about potentially being able to feed that to their cattle.
And so, you know, for those who are graduating as an agronomist, why should they come up here?
Oh, it's just amazing. There's so much to see. Lifestyle-wise, there's so much happening. The people are really great here. I think it's one of those places where I would say like 80% of the town are blow-ins. You know, there's not that many people that have lived here for a really, really long time. But everyone has the same story of, I was just stopping by for a season and I'm here 10 years later.
Or yep.
I initially would be here for 2 years and 5 years later, I can't.
Do you see, can't, yeah, what's the future like?
It's a great question. I don't think I'll be here forever. I think it would be nice to be closer to friends and family one day. I'm not ready to leave yet. When I think about leaving, I kind of get a bit sad because I feel like my time's not over yet. But yeah, it's funny. We've recently got a junior agronomist and her story is very similar to mine. She came up last year as a prac student and she's now joined the team here at Ordco. So something in the water, I guess.
And so it's just so different to what you would have seen growing up in Kelleburra and surrounded by those golden fields.
Yeah.
To, you know, even the ranges, like the cotton fields with the ranges in the background. Like it's just like nothing anyone could imagine in the Wheatbelt.
I know, and I feel in a way like so lucky, but also when I try and think of where I will move to next down south, I can't think of anywhere that would compare to Cotanara. Like I feel very blessed to be able to be an agronomist in a place that's got so much fresh water and fishing and all the things that we get to experience here. It's a really special place.
Now I have to ask, how did you go in the giant pumpkin growing competition for Cotanara?
I didn't actually enter this year.
That's criminal, but local agronomist.
I know. I tried last year. I actually tried out the front of the shop here as a bit of a display and, ended up one day just picking them out and chucking them in the bin.
Why were they not growing fast enough?
It was embarrassing. My excuse is the main growing period is obviously when I'm so busy at work. So
oh, yeah.
I think I got some grubs or something and I just thought, oh, nah.
Next year. But you can't leave until you've won giant pumpkin.
I know, yeah. My boss did enter one this year. I don't know if she placed, but, you know, she did better than me.
She got something to pick to to take. What are some strengths of Northern Australia? What potential does it have for its future?
I think Northern Australia is ever-changing, and I think there's been a lot more investment into the area recently, which is really exciting. I think it's relatively young, so there's quite a lot of young people that move up here, whether that's for, you know, their gap year or, you know, I want to do something different before I settle down. Yeah, I think that the businesses in town will take a good person when they see it. Yep. So if you've got a little bit of drive to, you know, you really get looked after and it's a really nice community to be a part of.
Yeah. That's good. And someone in a previous episode of, they said something about the North and everyone's here for a reason because everyone is a blow-in, you know, well, not everyone, but as you say, about 80%, particularly as working in ag, you come up with a purpose, like you're here by choice and it reflects on the community in a way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the isolation, which I would say is one of the challenges that I felt when I moved here. The isolation can be difficult, but I think we all experience it together. So, yeah, there's no shortage of a helping hand.
Yeah, in isolation comes, like, opportunity.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So, you know, you rely on your community a lot more, whereas, like, again, comparison to the Wheatbelt, I think when you're only a couple of hours from Perth, it's nothing to get in the car and drive to Perth.
Yeah,
whereas
for sure.
Whereas you are stuck here on a weekend.
For sure, yeah. There's no, I'm just going to duck to the next town over and go out for coffee with someone not from my town, or I did feel like not having an escape, but you get used to it and you know, get to Darwin when you can or get to Broome when you can, and that's enough for me. But I think being from Caliberran, I've in some ways naively thought I'm used to being isolated or I'm used to living in the country, but being able to drive to Perth in 2 hours is a whole lot different to, you know, a 10-hour drive to Broome or Darwin.
Now, another big question for you. What makes a good leader?
I think being understanding, so being able to read your team and understand your people and why they might do things in certain ways. I think leading by example is a massive one and something that I try to do with the younger agronomists that we have on the team. Being approachable is really important. Yeah, so knowing that someone feels comfortable to come and speak to you if they need to, and being an open book as well.
How do you reckon a good leader is approachable? That's a good one, I think.
I think it's getting the balance right between not necessarily being a mate, but, you know, being a friendly face, and but also having a line there. Yes, I'm here for you, but we're not going to go to the pub on the weekend, you know?
Yeah. And what advice would you have to your younger self?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would say stress less.
Yeah.
I've always been somewhat of a perfectionist, and it's only now as I get older where I sort of reflect on things that I cared about, and it's always things that you think about yourself but no one else would notice. So yeah, stress less, and it's not the end of the world if something isn't perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, good. Do you have any other parting words?
Yeah, just do it. Get in contact with us at Ordco or the Ag Department. Come give it a go. Even if it's just a couple of weeks while you're quiet down there, if seeding hasn't started. Yeah, come give it a go. And
is there seasonal jobs up here?
For sure. Okay. Yeah, plenty of jobs up here if you're keen. That would range from picking fruit to driving tractors to, you know, we have a team of bug checkers here, so they help us agronomists during the season. Yeah,
it's a bug checker. That's cool.
Yeah, I think, I don't think they do this down south, but...
oh my gosh, that might be my next job.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's, so they go out and scout the crops for us. So we've got a little app on our iPads and they're checking each crop, or each field, 10 times. And then that feeds into our
Romy report. I suppose it's the same as like Heliothus and, you know, like in the canola back home.
Yeah.
I suppose it's the equivalent.
The same, yeah. But
it just sounds more fun up here.
I think it's a lot more intense here just because we don't have the scale that they have down south. So we would work on higher thresholds, but also have more resources. Mm. Like we can throw more resources at it because it's not like 1,000 hectares. It's a small, say 100 hectare crop.
Yep.
So yeah, they're our seasonal workers and they come from all over the place. Sometimes we get backpackers, sometimes we get uni students or people having gap years.
That's awesome. So for any uni students listening, there's definitely like seasonal
workers. Oh, for sure. Yeah. We've had quite a few uni students come up and do that. And it's a really good way to find your feet and get really good at identifying bugs.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Tip. Lovely to see you.
Thank you so much, Jodie. I hope you all learned as much as I did during this episode. The Livestock Collective is a non-for-profit aimed at providing information and capacity building within the supply chain. Our education projects include our website, social media, and attending events across the country. And our capacity building projects include leadership workshops and things like this podcast. So if you know somebody that you want to hear from, then you should send them our way. And if you value what the Livestock Collective does, subscribe to us to continue to support the work we do in sharing your story. If you value advocacy, then please consider investing in us.